Case number 061412, State Extension C, Petitioner versus Federal Aviation Administration, et al. Mr. Hernandez for petitioner, Mr. Meyer for respondent.
Mr. Hernandez, good morning.
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honor, may it please the court. I'm David Hernandez, and I'm counsel for Safe Extension Incorporated. And I'd first like to say, I think this case represents the exact reason why Congress enacted the Administrative Procedure Act to deter agencies from acting in an arbitrary and capricious manner, just as the FAA has acted in this case. Specifically, this case for us represents a four-year battle with the FAA just to get our product recognized, despite the fact that Congress in Air 21 put a line item veto suggesting that the administrator consider our products.
Why don't you address the jurisdictional issue?
Yes, sure. Specifically with respect to the court's order of October 10th, whether or not we were timely because we did not choose to file against essentially Advisory Circular 42E. Your Honor, Advisory Circular 42E was, by definition, an informal advisory circular by the FAA. Immediately after the advisory circular was issued, the FAA told the industry that ignore Advisory Circular 42E because...
42 what?
Excuse me, 42E, Your Honor. 42E.
They said to ignore that?
Essentially ignore it. The reason for this position, we understand, Advisory Circular 42E was very much a departure from the FAA's previous position with respect to stainless steel adjustable products. Specifically, Advisory Circular 42E would essentially prohibited the use by de facto creating a test that was virtually impossible to pass, prohibit the use of stainless steel adjustable products. We have...
Which is your complaint here, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and that's in 42E. Okay, and then how did the FAA tell people to ignore 42E? I missed that.
Well, Your Honor, within the 60-day window after the publication of 42E, the FAA, immediately after FAA published 42E, there was a significant uproar in the industry because of this change.
Okay.
As a result, various members of the industry, such as Olson Industries, Siemens, others that I mentioned in the brief, met with the FAA or sent emails to the FAA or sent correspondence to the FAA saying, this advisory circular simply won't work. It essentially eliminates the use of stainless steel adjustable threaded products. As a result, the FAA told industry virtually immediately that you're right. What we're going to do is we're going to issue a new draft, a draft F.
How did they tell you that?
Well, Your Honor, it was through emails, telephone calls.
Are they in the record here?
Your Honor, we didn't have an opportunity to submit anything for the record. Certainly, with a FOIA request or if allowed, we can gather the necessary information.
Well, the FAA didn't raise this argument, to be fair to you. We raised it, so.
Exactly, Judge. So, I mean, it's certainly we could have, you know, at a later date, if necessary, we can certainly provide that information. We were looking at the information, frankly, before the hearing.
Right.
That being said, we looked at it from a strategic matter. Do we challenge 42E when we know that the FAA is going to issue an amendment very shortly, or do we wait and see if the FAA addresses the issues that we had with 42E, which would, in our opinion, would be a reasonable thing to do, and issue a 42F, that was fine with us. There's actually precedent for this in Paralyzed Veterans CBA, or excuse me, Civil Aeronautics Board, and I'll just cite the case. 572F2nd 694 at page 705, note 82. And this court in that case, with after reviewing the arguments, determined that the petitioners had reasonable grounds to wait 6 months after the fact to file. Essentially, the FAA's position, or the CAB and the FAA's position in that case, is you should have filed your petition for review after the final order was issued. Essentially, the petitioner in that case waited 60 days, or I should say, filed within the 60 days after an amendment to that final rule, which was 6 months after the publication. And the court simply ruled then, or this court simply ruled then, that, you know, there was reasonable grounds because the petitioner was exhausting its administrative process. It was trying to resolve this process informally via submission of comments. In this case, just like in that case, the FAA requested comments for the draft 42D. They evaluated the comments, they responded to those comments, and then they issued 42F. Once we realized that 42F still did not address our concerns, then we made the conscious decision to pursue a petition for review based on 42F. I will add, though, that the FAA, in the revision from 42E to 42F, did eliminate the requirement, the freestanding test requirement, for non-load-bearing cans. It did make that change and did address some of the concerns, but it certainly didn't address all of the concerns. The problem with the advisory circular, in large part, we believe that it essentially discriminates against our product. And I say discriminate, essentially it treats two similarly situated products, or two identical products in fit, form, and function, differently for no apparent reason. Or the reason that they gave or provide, in our opinion, fails to address the obvious concerns associated with that two industry experts, Olson Industries and Seaman Airfield Solutions, specifically informed the FAA. In fact, Olson Industries said that to apply this test, or to not apply this test to the galvanized fixed products, would be disastrous, given the rotation or potential rotation involved.
I have a question. In the FAA's appendix, there are these comments, the FAA's response to comments.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's at page 83, I think, 83 to 84. Is that basically the record in this case? Is that what we're, well, when did you first see this? When did the industry see this response to comments?
Your Honor, you're saying when they published the comments?
Yeah.
It would have been on or before October 16th when they published the advisory circular, 42F.
They published them simultaneously?
Yes.
So you had no opportunity to respond to these responses
to the comments? You're exactly right, Your Honor. I think you hit the nail on the head there. The way that the process worked, the FAA only sent emails and notified select individuals, i.e., Siemens Airfield Solutions, ELECT, or ETL, essentially the third body testing person or the entity, and Siemens Airfield Solutions. They didn't send our client any information on this. The only way we were able to find out about this is through our interactions with the folks that did receive this information.
But they were published simultaneously with 42F, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But some people had it earlier. Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, essentially, I'm not sure who, if anybody, had it earlier.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But
so here's another question about the record. You say in your brief that your products do have anti-rotational devices. These perpendicular bolts?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Did you point that out to the FDA at all? Is there anything in the record that indicates they knew that, FDA knew that when it issued 42F?
Your Honor, only to the extent that we knew that one of the individuals that was manufacturing our product via licensing agreement was manufacturing those products, and that the product or the diagram that company had submitted to the FAA contained that technology. In our brief, we were simply perplexed why the FAA didn't acknowledge that.
Just say again when you, but when did you advise the FAA about the anti-rotational devices?
Your Honor, our client, or Safe Extensions, did not.
But somebody else did?
Yes, Your Honor. We don't have that knowledge as to when.
And is that in the record of this case?
Yes, Your Honor. We put that in our reply.
Forget your reply brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it, setting that aside, is it in the record?
No, Your Honor.
It's not. And these documents that you do want to submit, I guess it's the same point. You say in those documents that these documents apparently show, according to you, that the fixed products lack anti-rotational devices, right? While yours does. Now, none of those documents were submitted to the FAA, right? Is that right?
Which?
The ones that you want us to take account of now.
Your Honor, we don't have any knowledge of that. I mean, all of those products are approved products by the FAA. So by definition, they would have to be submitted to the FAA, or the FAA would have to have knowledge of them. Uh-huh. And I'll add on that specific point that in the advisory circular with respect to the anti-rotational design of those products, the FAA makes the distinction that the reason why we're treating this product differently, we're treating the two products differently, is one product has this anti-rotational technology. Nowhere in Advisory Circular 42F is there any depiction of that anti-rotational device, nor is it required. In practice, most people in most airports or contractors don't use it because it costs more money, and it's not required.
You make the point that fixed devices don't have, or the fixed products don't have anti-rotational devices at DFW and the New York airports, right? Is that true?
That's what we believe, Your Honor, yes. I mean, those products that were installed at those airports, based on the information we gathered, indicates that there's no mandatory requirement to put those products in there. And I would challenge FAA to say whether or not they know there is or isn't.
We'll ask them.
All right, Your Honor, just continuing on. I guess to further go after standing, or I should say to address the jurisdictional issues, the FAA believes that this advisory circular is not a final order. And we firmly deny or firmly disagree with that, because it's certainly a final order. There was a consummation of the rulemaking process here, and frankly, you've read the briefs, the FAA doesn't deny that. I think what the FAA says, and in fact, reading between the lines on the FAA's brief, they don't deny that there's an obligation. They go through a list of what it doesn't do, but they don't deny the fact that there's an obligation on the part of airport lighting manufacturers. We are an airport lighting manufacturer, and we certainly have obligations with respect to this product, and legal consequences certainly flow from this product. So we would say there's definitely this advisory circular is a final order. With respect to standing, there's certainly injury in fact here. We are no longer, or anyone for that matter, is no longer able to produce stainless steel adjustable threaded products. There is direct causation with Advisory Circular 42F, and in terms of redressability, we would certainly like the court to initially remand this to force the FAA or instruct the FAA to simply sit down with us and industry and create an advisory circular that addresses all of the concerns and is also consistent with congressional intent here. Congress, with respect to the FAA Act, instructed the FAA to create rules and regulations to ensure safety. And frankly, with the way the FAA is treating these products, it certainly doesn't do that. The galvanized strict product in industry would certainly fail this test. And if this test is an important test for the FAA or to ensure safety, it's astonishing that they've been informed that this test would fail, or this product would fail that test 100% of the time. The FAA knows that. It didn't address it in the comments. Those comments were certainly there, again, from Olson Industries and Siemens. It makes no sense why the FAA didn't address that. At the end of the day, if there's a logical explanation, I think it's reasonable, consistent with the requirements of the APA, for the FAA to address that. Similarly, the FAA is concerned that for some reason installers install our product incorrectly, i.e. pour the grout and the cement around the products, but they don't do that with our competitor's product, which just makes no sense. Installers, if you're going to install one product incorrectly, it was reasonable to assume you install all products incorrectly. Again, if the FAA has evidence of that, they should include it in the record. And I think the other point to make is the FAA mentioned that there's this failure rate out there and that airport grantees have complained. Again, Siemens Airfield Solutions and Olsen Industries have installed over 50,000 of these products since 1998, and not one report of any failure. Again, there's no basis for that allegation. And all of those allegations were why the FAA is treating our product differently than our competitor's product. Your Honor, I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the Court. My name is Peter Mayer, counsel for the FAA. Let me begin by addressing the jurisdictional concern that the Court raised in its October 10 order. After examining the issues that's raised by that inquiry by the Court, we believe that the petition for review is untimely and this Court lacks jurisdiction. Here's why. The petition for review was filed within 60 days of the most recent circular, 42F. But the portion of the circular that is challenged in the petition for review is language that was inserted in the prior version, 42E, and I think petitioner's counsel conceded as much this morning. Under settled law, when you have a petition for review, it's got to be filed within 60 days of the insertion of the language.
Did the FAA tell the industry not to worry about 40, not to worry, but that there would be a subsequent circular that would address some of the concerns that have been identified?
There's nothing in the record.
I know there's nothing in the record. But
Your counsel stood up here and just told us that there are emails and letters advising the industry not to worry about 42E. Is that false?
No, I think it is false. That is, there's an ongoing communication, Judge Tatel, between the industry and the technical people at the FAA about these products. That dialogue takes place all the time. But I cannot believe that there was any dialogue in which the FAA told the industry that it need not comply with 42E.
That's a different question.
Let me make sure I understand your question, Judge Kavanaugh.
It wasn't need not comply. It was that they're going to consider some of the comments and there will be quickly another circular issued.
Not on that issue. And here's how we know.
That raises a delicate question. I mean, what issues were up for grabs and what weren't?
Fine.
Did the FAA make clear on this issue that it's not going to change?
This issue, Judge Kavanaugh.
Can you answer my question? On this issue, did the FAA say to anyone it's not going to change?
I'm not sure that there was any dialogue, Judge Kavanaugh, in which manufacturers asked the agency to change the freestanding torque test, which is what this is about. If you look at the record, and the appendix numbering is a little confusing, it's page 38 of the appendix, or 33, you will find in the draft of 42F, which is what the industry was invited to discuss, number five, principal changes from 42E. Only one thing is identified there. The inside diameter of the intermediate flanges of sectional bases.
Right, but their point is that that's what they're now complaining about. They're now arguing that they were told it would change and it didn't. And you're just confirming that, aren't you?
No, quite to the contrary. My point, Judge Tatel, is if the FAA had, as the petitioners have said this morning, don't worry about the freestanding torque test, we're going to change it. they would have announced that in this thing, in terms of the principal changes that were being proposed.
Well, their point is that you changed, the agency changed its mind. In fact, you know, their petition for review here is written in a way that suggests they may be right. Their petition review says that they're not just challenging 42F. They're saying, I'm quoting from it, FAA failed to provide any rational basis for refusing to revise the circular. It sounds like they thought the FAA had made a promise to revise 42E.
Judge Tatel, I've looked at the documents that
they... But what about this language? For refusing to revise the circular.
Judge Tatel, even in the documents that the petitioners have sought to add to the record, I do not believe you will find any communications.
Well, they didn't know there was a jurisdictional issue of this kind until this court raised it.
I'm sorry, Judge Tatel, I couldn't hear you.
They didn't know there was a jurisdictional issue until this court raised it.
Well, but they inserted, it seems to me, any documents that they could amass with respect to communications. Between
but you're telling the court now, you're just assuring us that there are no documents from the FAA telling petitioners not to worry about 42E. We're going to change it.
That's
you're
what I'm
assuring the court of that.
There were references to telephone calls. All I can tell you, Judge Tatel, is that I've talked to the responsible FAA officials on this, and if there had been some informal undertaking to re-examine this issue, I am confident that they would have told me about it.
Why didn't you raise this issue in your brief?
Well, Judge Kavanaugh, we raised a number of other jurisdictions.
I'm aware. That's why I was surprised this wasn't in there.
Well, it was not as clear to me as perhaps it should have been that the gist of the objection to 42F was the particular language about freestanding tort test.
Well, isn't it reasonable to read 42F as essentially the FAA circular upon reconsideration of 42E? Isn't that the most logical way to read what happened here? And therefore, we can move on to the other issues.
Well, let me try to respond what I thought the court's question was with respect to the timeliness of the petition for review. If the FAA, in terms of its draft 42F, had said, we're going to look again at this freestanding torque test, then it seems to me that this would come under the reopening exception to the normal rule that you've got to challenge things within 60 days. But when the agency doesn't do that, you're not within the reopening rule. You're still within the 60 days. In response to some of the questions from the court this morning, the question was whether the petitioner had placed before the agency, with respect to the consideration of 42F, any materials that showed that their particular product was similar to the other product, the fixed device. And the answer is no, because Safe Extensions did not submit comments to the agency.
Some of the commenters said that the rule or the draft was biased, correct?
Well,
against adjustable.
They did say that it was, I reject the term bias, but it said that
that was stated, and then the FAA, what was its response to that?
Well, its response was that they have two different tests because the products are very different and there were no problems really posed by the fixed bases as opposed to the ones that are adjustable. So it would be inappropriate to have one test that relates to both when it was only the adjustable products that had this problem. Now,
what's this problem?
What in the record indicated that there was a problem with it?
The reference, as you pointed out, Judge Tatel, is on page 83 of the appendix, which is all that the agency put out there on this.
But those are just statements by the agency. That's not evidence.
Well, they're reference to the agency's knowledge and expertise.
No, but it's not evidence. I mean, it's an agency conclusion, but where's the evidence that supports it? well, in the record?
Well, Judge Tatel, the agency has never proceeded on the premise that the issuance of circulars of this kind represents a rule or an order that's the equivalent of something that has to be put in.
One consequence of that could mean that the agency's been violating the APA for quite a while.
Well, I don't believe that's the case, Judge Tatel. If we are right with respect to the questions with respect to whether the circulars represent an order. And I'm confident.
Let's assume you're wrong about that for a minute, okay? That it is an order, okay? Then do you agree with me that the record does need to have evidence in it that supports the agency's conclusions?
Well, yes, but in terms of judging that evidence, Judge Tatel, it seems to me that the court has always made clear that all that's necessary is for the agency's path to be reasonably discernible.
Right, but there has to be evidence.
Well,
and then we defer to the agency's judgment about that. But let's just go through it quickly, okay? Okay. One of the reasons that the agency gave is that adjustable products are newer, right?
Right.
That's what you say in your brief, right?
That's correct.
Okay. I didn't see that in the draft circular or the final one.
It wouldn't, Judge Tatel, because that issue wasn't teed up.
Okay. So we can't rely on that, right? I mean, you've said in your briefs that one difference is that adjustable devices are newer, but the agency didn't say that, correct?
Well, that's true.
Okay, so we can't consider that one.
Well, I'm not so sure that's true.
Why
this
not?
Court has said on more than one occasion that when you have a relatively informal issuance, like the one that we have here, mm-hmm. the court may look not only to the particular explanation that the agency has given as part of whatever you want to call rulemaking, but it can be elaborated on in the brief that the government has filed.
You just use the word elaborate, which is the key point. This isn't elaboration. This is a rationale that the agency did not provide, that these are newer.
Well,
it's not an elaboration. It's a new reason.
Judge Tatel, if we're looking at this from a real-world perspective, there's no doubt that the industry realizes that the adjustable product does represent a new technology.
I know, but you and I are going in circles. You concede, right, that this reason was not given by the agency, right?
It okay. doesn't appear on page 83.
Okay. So the second reason that I found in here is that the fixed products have this anti-rotational device, right?
Right.
But what in the record supports that other than the staff response to comments at page 83 of your brief? Is there anything?
If we're defining the record as we define it, the only documents that the agency considered, there's nothing in there except what you see at page 83. That's
okay.
true.
And so, and that's just the statement of agency officials, correct, about the difference between these devices?
That's right.
Okay. But there's no other evidence in the record that supports it?
Not in the record that technically forms the basis for this court's review, assuming that the circular is reviewable.
Yeah. Now, you say that the petitioner here never told the agency that its devices had anti-rotational its equipment had anti-rotational devices, these bolts, right?
That's right.
Okay, when would they have done that?
They would have done that supposedly at the same time that Siemens and Olson were communicating with the uh-huh. agency. Siemens and Olson, I should add, are licensed.
In response to the draft?
That's right.
Okay.
Siemens and Olson, I should add, as I understand it, are licensees of Safe Extensions. So they are in a position to convey.
Okay, I understand. Now, the final rationale I saw in this document was that there have been problems in the field with adjustable
That's
products,
right?
Right?
That's right.
Okay. Where in the record do we find that other than in this document?
You would not. The agency has always proceeded, Judge Tatel, on the basis that these informal circulars do not require the same kind of full-pledged evidentiary finding support
also,
that you would typically...
Yeah. This is a situation where the comments from the two companies that did comment, they said they weren't aware of any field problems with respect to adjustable devices at all.
Well, but Judge Tatel, they might not be. After all, the dialogue is going to be taking place
But what we have here then is we have the only thing we have then in the record is agency official statements that there are problems. And we have a comment from two companies that make these things that they're not aware of them, of any problems. So isn't that at least a pretty serious factual dispute?
Well, with respect, Judge Tatel, the manufacturers or distributors of these products might not be privy to knowledge about that.
Wouldn't it have been relatively easy for the agency to, if it has evidence of problems with these devices, to have put it in the record to support its conclusion?
If you were dealing with this, if this were the only circular under the sun, I suppose it would be, but you're talking about a whole regimen with respect to changes like this that take place all the time. I have only a moment left. Let me try to complete
my... Are you suggesting that, you're not really serious that an agency which, has many things like this to do doesn't have to comply with the Administrative Procedure Act in the process just because it has a lot of work?
No.
What
I'm suggesting, Judge Taylor, and I think there's jurisprudence with respect to what constitutes an order.
Well, all my questions were based on the assumption that this is an order.
Well, that's a huge assumption. But let me just try to complete my answer to your earlier question in terms of why these commenters might not know of those problems. Mm-hmm. That dialogue is taking place between the FAA and the airport sponsors. They're the ones that are having that communication. You could have communications of lots of problems, and they would not necessarily be problems that would come to the attention of those folks that are selling those light bases.
How is this not an order?
Yeah.
It's not an order, Judge Kavanaugh, because it doesn't impose an obligation, deny a right, or fix a legal relationship.
Right?
No, sir, it doesn't. The rights, to the extent that they exist, are rights between the airports and the FAA.
Can airports buy this petitioner's product now?
They do.
I thought they couldn't.
Well, I thought you were talking about in the general scheme of things.
I'm asking whether with under 42F, I assume that the airports can no longer buy these adjustable devices.
To my knowledge, they have not been certified by the third-party certifying bodies.
Yeah, the answer
is
they can't buy them, right? That's
no,
the whole process.
I misunderstood the question in terms of how this theoretically works as opposed to a factual question, are they on the eligible list now? My understanding is that they're not because no third-party certifying body has certified them to be.
It's a final order with respect to them.
Because it doesn't deny them a right. The criteria, the guidelines saying this is what an airport must require in order for the airport to get federal funding doesn't deny a right to a supplier. And the case law, it seems to me, is pretty clear on that. It often comes in the area of standing, that just because...
Is this the aerospace case you cite?
With one of the cases,
which
the Thomas case...
Which you said... I think you said it was a controlling D.C. Circuit case in your
I clearly erred on that, yeah. Judge Taylor, because of the Third Circuit.
Yeah, it's a big difference. That case was different anyway. It only involved a warning that didn't have an immediate effect on the company. That's all that was involved in that case. It didn't impose any consequences at all.
It seems to me you get the same answer whether you look at it from the standpoint of standing or whether you look from the standpoint of an order. The mere fact that a regulatory regime between the federal government and a regulated entity, here an applicant for federal grant money, the airport sponsors, may cause severe economic impact on third parties, doesn't vest third parties with rights, and it doesn't create obligations or vest rights or fixed legal relationships with respect to those parties. They're the criteria. They're out there. They're criteria that the airports must follow. The airports must follow them. And those vendors who seek to do business with federally regulated entities are at risk in terms of their ability to fabricate products that meet the demands of the regulated party. Absent further questions from the court, we're prepared for
this. Does Mr. Hernandez have any time? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. Very quickly, to address the FAA's counsel position on whether or not the advisory circular poses any obligation, I'd refer the court to the order itself in the last sentence. This AC provides the basic standards and requirements for critical dimensions and performance requirements to which all manufacturers must demonstrate compliance. I think it's fairly obvious that there's certainly obligations here. With respect to legal consequences, failure to comply with these requirements is a basis for a civil penalty or decertification. Addressing the issue about whether or not we were properly or whether or not we should have challenged 42E, absolutely. The FAA said, we're going to look at everything with respect to 42E. There was a huge industry uproar, and they said that this freestanding torque test is just outrageous. And what did the FAA do? They eliminated the freestanding torque test with advisory circular 42F. They did address partial our concerns. They didn't address everything. And as the paralyzed veteran case said, look, why waste resources if the FAA is likely to amend the order sufficient enough that you don't have a case? We don't want to be here. But, well, Your Honor, I don't mean to put it that way. But ultimately, we would have liked to resolve this thing informally, and that would have been our first choice. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And so that's why we're here. We're asking this court to remand this back to the FAA with instructions to treat similarly situated products equally. This advisory circular does nothing for us. It eliminates the product entirely. Industry knows that. The FAA knows that. And with respect to the FAA's comment that airports and the FAA deal with this, airports don't even probably know about 42F. It's the manufacturers. And if there's a problem with this product, the people go back to the manufacturer and say, look, I have a problem. We've installed 50,000 of these things over 60 airports in the last almost 10 years, and there's not been one complaint that we're aware of. Thank you, Your Honor.
Wait, hold on let us caucus a second. Mr. Hernandez, you mentioned in your opening argument that, and I think I'm right, there were emails, phone calls, things like that. Now, that's pretty informal. If we ask both sides to supplement with any record material that indicated that you were told, in your words, to ignore E-42, do you have, I don't want to pin you down now, have something other than emails, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Your Honor, we certainly would search our records. I mean, the problem with this and what it's so frustrating is a lot of this stuff's done informally. We have the emails, we have letters that address the whole process. After 42E was published, there was a huge backlash. The FAA said, look, guys, okay, we'll address your concerns. We'll do it right this time. We'll publish 42F in a draft form.
How did they do this? How did they say
telephone calls, emails, letters, but nothing formal, because as Judge Kavanaugh, as you I think noted, the FAA would never say disregard an advisory circular we put out. Never do that.
Why don't you submit, you mentioned letters, why don't you submit, at least that's something we can look at. And the same, if you have anything to the contrary, if you'd submit those as well. And let's do it in the next 10 days.
Your Honor, one question. Can I, because a lot of these communications were directly with the manufacturers through telephone conversations, can we also submit affidavits from those manufacturers? I think that's reasonable, given the fact that they did occur and they were informal.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
One of us has requested that it be done in 5 days.
Okay. All right, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Henderson, before I start introducing affidavits, would it be appropriate for me to introduce affidavits from the concerned agency people with respect to what they did in Jensen UK?
Sure. Yes, absolutely. All right. Will you call the next case?